Session 59, June 3, 1964. The Early Sessions, Volume 2 of the Seth Material. Good evening, Rob. Good evening, Seth. Seth, you have seen that the ego is a building block. It never becomes less than a unit and may become more. The fragments that may develop from it do not make it less. At one time, I mentioned massive units of blocks of intelligent energy, pyramids of psychic comprehensions, of which I cannot tell you too much at this time, but perhaps you can begin to perceive now how such comprehensions could be formed. Perhaps you can begin to sense the value fulfillment of such intelligent energy structures. You know very well that time as you know it has no meaning, except within the domain of your own plane. I have hinted once in the past that I was touched by something that could be loosely related to, or substituted for, what you think of as time. It has nothing to do with intervals, or with beginnings or endings. It has to do with not physical growth, of course, but with psychic fulfillment, which is, as you know, value fulfillment. We will call this quality depth, and yet it has nothing to do with space. This is a quality existing within assurance of expansion in terms of value fulfillment. Quality depth is therefore a sort of perspective having to do with value fulfillment. I can perhaps give you an analogy. Quality depth is the sort of perspective, the only perspective, in which an idea can expand. It could be said to take the place of both your space and time, though this is somewhat simplifying matters. It is the perspective of which psychic motion occurs. In hypnosis, for example, a trance is said to be light or deep. This corresponds somewhat to the kind of depth that is involved here. Unfortunately, when you think of depth, you think in terms of a movement, at once inward and outward. Here, we will most probably run into some difficulty, but I will try to explain what I mean, and will clear up any questions later. As the self has an inner and outer ego, so also does the inside finally become the outside. Theoretically, for example, if followed through, a deep trance leading into a deeper inside, so to speak, would bring you ultimately to another outside. The outer ego, for example, would meet the inner ego and vice versa. This is an instance of true traveling or psychic motion. Now, this quality that could be said to be a substitute for your space and time, this quality depth represents the perspective in which such sort of psychic traveling or psychic motion or any psychic action occurs. And its depth can be understood not in terms of downward action, but perhaps you can comprehend it if you think of a deep trance, for example, as definitely having motion, though the body may be motionless. But in a trance depth, as in quality depth, the motion has a direction that cannot be thought of in terms of up or down, north or south, east or west. The motion is actually through quality or value dimension. I have been meaning to speak about this. It could easily be called the inner extension of your psychological time, so you will see its importance. Psychological time, indeed, involves you in the initial venturing. It is like an outer rim. This quality of depth is our only true perspective. Again, no intervals are involved. I find difficulty in choosing words evocative of my meaning. I suggest your break. Rob notes, break at 9:27. Again, for the first break, Jane was fully dissociated. She knew that she was dictating very slowly, she said, yet she was not groping. She felt Seth was searching her vocabulary in order to express himself as best he could. Here she thought that Seth was dealing with a concept that was not suited for expression in words, nor was it meant to be expressed in words. Jane felt that what came through was close enough, but still left a lot to be desired. Resume with deliberate and quiet manner at 9:31. Seth. Quality depth is therefore the perspective in which all psychic actions occur, all ideas and universes expand. This expansion occurs in definite dimension, as perhaps it could be said that an apple develops about its core, and that perhaps is not a good analogy. You see, your idea of geometry, the circle, triangles, and squares, are so based upon your own plane that the apple analogy containing the circle idea will be inadequate, since not enough dimensions are implied. The massive pyramids of comprehension have experienced such magnificent quality depth that they represent, to the best of my knowledge, the highest or most perfect psychic entity formation. And yet, they are not complete in terms of an entire possession of comprehension. They are not because, that is, they are not entire or complete or perfect in terms of quality depth. Because as far as I know, such a perfection is impossible. A sublime discontent will drive them to form ever new patterns of existence, new perspectives of quality depth in which to move and explore. I do not wish to become so involved that you literally screech at me for explanations. Nevertheless, once you ask me about the weather, where I am, and I put you off. This is, I admit, somewhat of a play on words. Nevertheless, I have spoken of the value climate of psychological reality. Now, if you wish, quality depth operates within the same value climate of psychological reality and gives truly amazing dimension to the spacious present, which is contained within the value climate of psychological reality. You may, if you wish, consider the quality depth principle as blowing like a wind through the spacious present. It indeed being like a wind in that it is known by its effects. And if you must think of it visually, it would, perhaps, have a funnel shape. All of these concepts are most difficult to translate into word patterns. I suggest your break. And I must say that with the necessary use of words as symbols, we are, nevertheless, doing very well. Rob notes break at 9:51. Jane was dissociated as usual. For the last several minutes, I had become increasingly aware of some of the now familiar sensation Jane and I labeled as fat hands. It was strongest in the fingers of my left hand this time, whereas usually my right hand will be most involved. I did not attempt any measurements this time, being satisfied now that when this feeling of enlargement is present, there is a definite physical difference. See the 54th session. Jane's hands were not affected, although they had been in the last session. Last week, Jane had awakened with the lower left side of her jaw badly swollen. The doctor had thought it a bad tooth and put her on a regimen of antibiotics. The swelling was now gone, and Jane felt all right, though she planned to see a dentist for an x-ray to check upon any possible bad tooth. She had no trouble eating. Now, during break, she used the pendulum to ask her subconscious a few questions about the cause of the swelling. The answers she obtained indicated the cause was psychosomatic and that a salivary gland had been involved. While she was conducting this little session, she reported that she felt a great amused tolerance from Seth. She resumed in the same manner at 10:03. Seth, it is much easier for me to deal with other people's illnesses and health nuances than it is to deal with Rupert's. He asks me a question and then slams the ego gates down, refusing to hear the answer. Because of any distorted possibilities, I try to stay out of such matters unless they are serious. Whenever dates are mentioned incidentally, I would suggest caution and attention, regardless of the reason given or the person to whom the date is supposed to be significant. This is a good general practice, a few times because Rupert was so upset. I managed to console him by saying that he wasn't pregnant, when he rather feared that he might be. But you are not, after all, supposed to depend upon me, but to develop your own insights, and also to gain from your own mistakes and experience. This is why I do not give you gaudy predictions. Rupert is quite free to use the pendulum. This involves something that has nothing to do with me, but is a fairly reliable method of reaching the subconscious. As a rule, the answers are dependable, and this is all I will say. The material with which we are dealing tonight is extremely vital, and yet is only given in outline form. Incidentally, for Rupert's benefits, first he finds difficulty with his writing, and then gets something wrong with him physically, not the other way around. He will not have to worry about serious physical illness, nor will you, Joseph. As a sideline, often physical illness of a serious nature or habitual bad health can often be taken as an indication that the individual involved is in the maelstrom, the center, and his reincarnational cycle upon your plane. By the time that the end of the cycle is reached, minor disabilities are all that are usually encountered, because the vitality has been largely freed, and usually the most devastating problems have been solved. Rob notes, by now the sensation had left my hands. Seth. Any serious illness possible or probable in Rupert's present existence would have occurred in his youth, at the age of 15, when a severe psychic crisis threatened. A serious illness was possible for you, Joseph, at the age of 33, and was averted. However, in all cases, even minor physical nuances deplete energy. Energy is yours for the asking, as you know, but you must know enough to ask. Neither of you will lose physical organs from this time on, unless you drastically alter your personalities in an unwholesome manner. There is no doubt that Rupert should stop smoking. However, I know that he will, and I am not concerned. Seth, at this point, Jane held up her hands, indicating that now they were fat. Seth, since we are on the subject, I suggest that Rupert wash his mouth 4 times a day, at least for a week, with salt water. This will be advantageous. Also, that he continue what he is doing as far as writing poetry for at least an hour after supper. Subconsciously, his development along this line is of supreme importance to him, and working less at poultry will cause psychosomatic symptoms. He is afraid of speaking out aggressively when he feels unjustly taken advantage of, as he did not speak out against his mother out of fear of reprisal. Now, he does not send quite normal letters of inquiry to editors for the same reason, turning the aggression he feels inward against himself, and as a result, in a few cases, suffering. As far as the editors are concerned, since some of them move only when pushed. A deep feeling of dissatisfaction will show itself in early symptoms of furniture moving, not on a casual and to be expected normal scale, but on a truly monumental scale. The aggression, however, wants to be directed against the living things, and in lieu of angry letters, Rupert finally stops moving furniture and literally shoves himself about. I tell you this so that you will know that if the sudden disruption of your quiet apartment is a sign of such aggression, its sudden aftermath is often a sign for stiff necks and sore gums. It would be much easier, I should think, in the long run, for Rupert to direct his aggression against the proper persons, where at least it will be understood. Editors, like other human beings, know when they are lax. If I can manage Rupert, then I will have a bit more to say, but only a bit, after you take your needed break. Rob notes, break at 10:31. Jane was dissociated as usual. My hand was somewhat weary, and her voice showed signs of weariness also. We resumed at 10:36. Seth. Quality depth as you probably guessed, can be added to our rules or principles of the inner universe. You will have more to do with it as your experiments with psychological time continue. Incidentally, my dear Joseph, I overheard you as you made a rather sardonic remark concerning my statement that you would have more energy as you needed it. All allusions to the contrary, such is the case, and only your attitude, which is more or less natural under the circumstances, holds you back. Seth, I've been wondering about that. As I recall, I made the remark several days ago. Seth, it is most important that you know, subconsciously, like many others, you believe that once energy is spent, it is gone, and also that you have only some arbitrary amount of energy to be used, after which you will become bankrupt. This is not only a false belief, but a dangerous and limiting one. It makes you use the last bit of available energy before replacement. The correct statement is that you have truly and practically inexhaustible stores of energy to draw upon. So-called nervous energy is that amount of energy present within the physical organism at any particular time. Energy, by nature, replaces itself and thrives with use. A false conception of energy, however, results in a psychic refusal to transform completely available energy into physical terms, merely because of the subconscious belief that such a transformation is basically impossible. You both should progress along these lines. In some respects, under usual circumstances at least, Rupert is more proficient than you, but in times of crisis he reverts and runs full steam ahead on limited energy. Often, quite automatically, he transforms available and abundant psychic energy for his own purposes, and later forgets how he has done it. Too conscious an attempt will not help, but this material should help. The physical organism does indeed require sleep, but only the physical organism with its brain. The mind is continually in vigilance. Nevertheless, when you are more proficient, you will, with the aid of automatic use of psychological time, be able to operate much more efficiently and be upheld by energy without strain. This will be one of the very practical contributions of these sessions to daily life. I am not going to keep you until 11:30. Nevertheless, these statements concerning energy should be taken most seriously, for you both can benefit from them. They are not distortions. Rupert's performance during our sessions should certainly be adequate proof for my statements concerning additional energy automatically taken and used. Rob notes, Seth's point here is certainly well taken, and Jane and I have often discussed her phenomenal physical performance during sessions. If one were to set out consciously determined to go walking for a period of 2 hours twice a week without fail, he might approximate somewhat what is involved. But Jane, while thus engaged, is also busy translating Seth's messages and speaking them aloud. So a more accurate performance might be for one to take a 2-hour walk, talking constantly the while, the combination interspersed with perhaps 3 short breaks. Seth, a very short mention of some foot trouble you had, Joseph, in California. The nail had to do with a horseshoe in a previous life. At that time, an unshod horse stepped upon a nail caught between the wooden planks of a portion of a stable floor, the nail being in an upright position and the horse's foot tender from an injury. Your father in that life tried to control the horse, but its forefoot came down upon the nail. Your father planked the hot shoe upon the foot, and you screamed, thinking of the horse's pain. You were the 3. When you stepped upon the nail in California, the memory leaped from the depths of the 3rd level of the subconscious, through shock, into the uttermost or 1st subconscious level. This was the reason for your serious physical trouble. It would not have been so serious, except that in the stable as a child, you could not understand how or why your father would so inflict pain upon the horse, slamming the hot shoe upon the wounded foot. You identified in terror with the animal, and hence, when you stepped on the nail for a moment, the identification brought on the physical condition. The horse serum base given you, therefore, only made the situation worse. This caused your violent physical reaction. The touch of paralysis was a result of your earlier paralysis of fear. Would your father treat you in the same manner? Reader notes, at this point, the session turned to giving a life session reading for Rob, of which I'm skipping. End session 59.